right, good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, November 11th, 2015. November 11th, November 6th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everybody. We made it again. It is 68 degrees and kind of drizzly here in upstate New York. I just saw one of our listeners in Montana said they looked out the window and saw snow. So happy snow to Montana and others. Thank God it's not here, but it will be soon. Where do we leave off the other day? Yesterday we did a roundtable. I was in the man cave for the first time in probably 2 years. And we did a round table with JJ and Kaz. That was a lot of fun. I miss doing those. We used to do them every Thursday a while back. But we're going to go back to where we left off on Wednesday and Monday, I believe. Wednesday, we titled the show Google White House Revolving Door, Big Data and Nest. And the show on Monday, we titled DARPA Google Collusion, Internet of Things Tracking and Hacking You. I had a whole bunch of stories that kind of dovetailed into some of this stuff and then continued on. And then some really disturbing stuff that I found yesterday afternoon that I wanted to end up the show and the week with. So anyway, there was a story. We can't talk about DARPA, Google, and the federal government or any of this mad science gone mad, of course, without talking about Ray Kurzweil. And I ran across Ray Kurzweil, who happens to be the director of engineering for their AI division at Google. Ray Kurzweil did an interview with CNN back December 26th, the day after Christmas, I believe, 2013, titled Ray Kurzweil, This is Your Future. And definitely something we want to pay attention to. And what caught my attention about this story was the fact that even in 2013, he was talking about RNAi. Anyway, let's take a look at this. By the early 2020s, which isn't that far away, we will have the means to program our biology away from disease and aging. And yes, this programming of your biology is something that Kurzweil has said, you know, we're going to cure aging, but the programming of your biology is all this crazy stuff we've been looking at. The ability to use other living organisms or other biological organisms, let's say, in some of the testing, and even synthetic organisms, which is some of the stuff that they're working on now, to reprogram your physical DNA, whether that be using some sort of virus you suck the guts out of and then put some sort of little DNA nanobot in there and let the virus go and invade the cell, and then the DNA to replicate within each cell, or to use some sort of nanobots themselves hidden inside of a payload that can invade cells. It's a pretty scary thought. Anyway, let's look at this. Up until recently, health and medicine was basically a hit or miss affair. We would discover interventions such as drugs that had benefits, but also many side effects. And I just saw a story this morning from Mike Snyder of the Economic Collapse blog looking at how we have at least 60%. I thought it was globally. Maybe it's, even if it was just the United States, 60% of our populace is on big pharma prescription medication. Think about that number. You have 60% who apparently believe at least somewhat in this medical healthcare system, regardless of the side effects. You know, you're going to bleed out of every orifice and end up with liver cancer, but hey, it's going to fix your itchy hands. You know, I mean, people just eat up the stuff because their doctor told them that it was okay, that it'll help them. The TV told them it was okay. And I think that they initially are going to be easy prey for any of this 21st century medicine now that we're talking about. So anyway, yes, there have been interventions with drugs that had benefits, but also many side effects. Until recently, we did not have the means to actually design interventions on computers. Dun, dun, dun. But all that has changed now and will dramatically change clinical practices by the early 2020s. We now have the information code of the genome and are making exponential gains in modeling and simulating the information processes they give rise to. We also have new tools that allow us to actually reprogram our biology in the same way that we reprogram our computers. Ding, da, da, ding. And here it comes. RNA interference, people. Yes, the good old RNAi, for example, can turn genes off that promote disease and aging. And we actually just saw a story last week, I believe, scientists had found in yeast. They could extend the life of the yeast by an additional 60% by just flipping one gene off. And don't think that people are going to be too far into the future. New forms of gene therapy, especially in vitro models that do not trigger the immune system, have the ability to also add new genes. And that's where we're going to have the X-Men show up one day. And this is absolutely insane. You're going to have people paying for their children to have superhuman traits before birth as they're mixing them up in a petri dish in the future. Stem cell therapies, including the recently developed method to create induced pluripotent cells, more affectionately known as iPSCs, by adding four genes to your own skin cell to create the equivalent of an embryonic stem cell, but without the use of an embryo. And I've talked about that. They can create stem cells now from skin. Remember way back in the days of Ronald Reagan, that whole argument came up. Ronnie Reagan was quite religious, and so he banned the use of stem cells for any type of gene therapy, but they got around that. Other countries didn't, but the U.S. did, but our scientists figured a way around it, and they can coax skin cells now to become basically the building blocks of life. But anyway, without the use of an embryo, are being developed to rejuvenate organs and even grow them from scratch. And we've talked about that as well, using 3D printers with that sugared scaffolding where they can, I assume that they scan your organ to get the correct shape and where all the capillaries are and any connections that it needs. And then they literally print it out with a blueprint on this 3D printer using stem cells. I would assume also that that would be how eventually some sort of home replicator for food would work with those test tube beef stem cells. That was pretty much what they were doing. They had created muscle cells that then they could get to grow in a petri dish and exercise them so they'd get nice and strong, just like a piece of meat. And then, you know, push of a button, bzz, 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 it prints you out a little steak. I mean, I definitely could see that in our future. And, you know, as they're going on about, oh, how dangerous meat is. Oh, red meat and processed meat, they're going to kill you. Yeah, but, you know, we do nothing at the regulatory agencies to make sure the cancerous chemicals that are in them are taken out. Just wait, because now there's some scary stuff about pork coming out as well. Some really, really disturbing information that in this one scientific journal, what they found when they started digging into this tapeworm they found in pork. Anyway, back to this. So yes, even being developed to rejuvenate organs and even grow them from scratch. And there are now hundreds of drugs and processes in the pipeline using these methods to modify the course of obesity, heart disease, cancer, and other diseases and aging processes. And back, oh, I'd say a month or two ago, we talked about that pipeline. I believe at the time there was over 271 new drugs and therapies sitting in the pipeline waiting for approval to be tested on humans. Now that's where the 21st Century Care Act comes in, because if Congress passes that, that pretty much gets rid of the FDA standing in the way of direct marketing from big pharma and big pharma device manufacturers and big pharma therapy developers and the desperate dying consumer. One of the many examples we can now fix is a broken heart. Not yet from romance, but from a heart attack, by rejuvenating the heart with reprogrammed stem cells. Health and medicine is now an information technology. And I'm telling you, I think that that's why I gravitate so strongly to this field right now, being 25 years in information technology from the early pre-internet days to where we are now in my understanding with all my health issues over the last 20 years and having to fix myself because no doctor could help me. It really, to me, what they're saying is absolutely true. I mean, they are treating our bodies like it is an application and an integrated system, because it is just way more complicated. But that's the problem. It took us 25 years to get computers figured out, plug and play, get everything to play nice together, so you didn't have all of the freaky issues that you would have in the past, having to match drivers and get applications that weren't meant to work together to work together. Well, the human body is a million times more or more complex than a computer system or a network. And so these lunatics who dub themselves gods, who think that it's okay to modify genes and then find some poor dying child with leukemia and start reprogramming her genes while she's alive, and then dub it a success because she's cured of her cancer, and hold her up as an icon, a beacon to show you how this 21st century medicine is going to help you live forever, to me, is very dubious indeed. Don't think that there isn't going to be bazillions of dollars made, and your sick children aren't going to be the guinea pigs of tomorrow. All right, anyway, let's get back to the story. Health and medicine is now an information technology and is therefore subject to what I call, and this is the author, quote, the law of accelerating returns, which is a doubling of capacity for the same cost about each year that applies to any information technology. And it is. I mean, technology gets faster and faster and faster every year. It's exponential. And as a result, technology is to reprogram the software that underlie the human biology are already 1,000 times more powerful than they were when the Genome Project was completed in 2003 and will again be 1,000 times more powerful than they are today in a decade, and 1,000,000 times more powerful in 2 decades. So people, there isn't a lot of time left before biology is completely usurped by synthetic biology, and everything that we're fighting for to remain human and Earth 1.0 will be over. Clinical applications are now the cutting edge and will be routine by 2020. And I'm not saying, you know, here's the thing, double-edged sword with any technology. I'm not saying that this is all evil. The technology isn't necessarily evil. Saving sick children is not evil. Curing an injured heart with new stem cell muscles is not evil, but it's the end result. It's the organizations that are involved in this. It's the fact that we have tech industry leaders working with federal government, working with the psycho arm of mad science gone mad, Department of Defense, DARPA, to crack all the secrets of biology so they can just push a button, select what traits they want, and according to the DARPA lady, create a new life form. And I think that that's already being messed with, and we'll look at that by the end of the show. All right, where do we leave off? By 2030, solar energy will have the capacity to meet all of our energy needs, and the production of food and clean water will also be revolutionized. Well, I wonder how. If we could capture one part in 10,000 of sunlight that falls to Earth, we could meet 100% of our energy needs using this renewable and environmentally friendly source. As we apply new molecular scale technologies to solar panels, i.e., I could guarantee you some sort of nanotechnology, the cost per watt is coming down rapidly. And already, Deutsche Bank, in a recent report, wrote, The cost of unsubsidized solar power is about the same as the cost of electricity from the grid in India and Italy. And by 2014, even more countries will achieve solar grid parity. The total number of watts of electricity produced by solar energy is growing exponentially, doubling every 2 years, and now it is less than 7 doublings from 100%. Hey, that's a good thing. Probably not a good thing for the oil people, but hey, you know what? There's always a double-edged sword. So just like rainwater falling from the sky in a lot of the states now is illegal for you to collect, because it was everybody's rain. I predict someday in the future, if they're using energy from the sun to power the planet 100%, collecting your own sunshine will probably also be a crime in the future. I can see it happening. That's, you know, hey, you stay in the shadows unless you got a pass. Similar approaches will address other resource needs. Once we have inexpensive energy, we can readily and inexpensively convert the vast amount of dirty and salinated water we have on the planet to usable water. So let's get rid of all the salinated water. Well, what about all the fish that live in it? That seems to be a bit of an issue as well. I mean, I'm all for getting the dirty water clean, but what are we going to put in it? Some sort of nanotechnology, carbon nanotubes, buckyballs to capture the chemicals. I mean, I don't know, but we got a question. Like, this is this magical science now that is coming to save us all and save the planet. Don't ask any questions. Don't ask if there's going to be any long-term risk, because we just don't know. We won't know for another generation or two till your kids are bumping into walls, or 60 to 80% of all children have autism. And then we go, whoops, whoops, we goofed. Says we are also heading toward another agricultural revolution. And here we go, guys, from horizontal agriculture to vertical agriculture. Yes, to 3D printed food as well, to where we grow very high quality food in AI controlled buildings. These will recycle all nutrients and end the ecological disaster that constitutes contemporary factory farming. We will include hydroponic plants for fruits and vegetables and in vitro cloning of muscle tissue for meat, which is meat without animals, thereby ending animal suffering. I mean, I guess, yes, what a utopia it sounds like. But, and, you know, I've said before, if I didn't have to eat meat, I probably wouldn't. I think cows are beautiful creatures. Chickens, if you've ever hung out with chickens, they're pretty cool. They're pretty close to dinosaurs. And I don't like to think of consuming them either. But on the other hand, what are your thoughts on cloned in vitro meat exercising in an AI temperature controlled building? I'm not too sure about that one, especially when they can engineer nutraceutical nutrients into any of this stuff. We also looked a while back at them being able to make vaccines and food, the banana, the apple, the potato, the lettuce, the rice. I mean, don't think that that isn't going on. They've been experimenting with that for 20 or 25 years already. And if they're building their new 21st century factory food farms, they'd be able to do anything they want. And don't think that corporations such as Syngenta and Monsanto aren't going to have something to do with that. Of course, this removes all of your independence because of our ecological disaster. You won't be able to grow your own animals, farm your own animals, or grow your own food anymore. It'll all be in centralized locations where they have the absolute control. If, back to the story, if we look at the life cycle of technologies that we see in an early period of overenthusiasm, then a bust when a disillusionment sets in, it's then followed by a real revolution. Remember that internet boom of the 1990s followed by the internet bust around the year 2000? Yes, I do. Well, we are now in the early boom phase of 3D printing enthusiasm. There we go. Ding, ding. And hopefully we've learned enough to avoid a period of undue disillusionment. So this must be Kurzweil speaking. But I do see in the early 2020s as the golden era of 3D printing. And we talked about that also with food, as well as organs. For example, he says, by the early 2020s, you'll have a choice of many thousands of cool clothing designs. So I guess they're going to do clothing as well. And remember, too, we looked at DARPA working on ubiquitous computing within clothing and being able to weave in nanotechnology into those threads and fibers. Different types of touch capabilities, so you can use your shirts or your pants as a computer. It's pretty bizarre stuff, but you will be connected 24/7. We're in the early boom phase of 3D printing enthusiasm, and hopefully we've learned enough to avoid a period of disillusionment. For example, in the early 2020s, you'll have a choice of many thousands of cool clothing designs that are open source and that can be printed out for pennies a pound. So, you know, I saw New Zealand just released the full text of the TPP last night. I have yet to look at it. I was still trying to catch up from being away for 24 hours. But, you know, the TPP is the next nail in the coffin for manufacturing that's going to send a large amount of anything that's left to very third world nations that can pay labor pennies on a dollar. But what's going to happen when robots and 3D printers eventually take all the jobs? AI takes all of the jobs that require mental capacity. And we even read about lawyers. Lawyers are in trouble now with AI. And a bunch of other things. Doctors, good old Watson, doing diagnoses and curing cancers. I mean, there's definitely a major, what they call disruptive change coming in the future. And Kurzweil has talked about it before, what happens when no one has jobs anymore because of this exponential increase in our technological capabilities in providing for everything we need. And what are we going to do when the human race has nothing to do? They don't have to work anymore. Well, we'll be able to spend our time and effort on creative pursuits and, you know, good old philosophical discussions. And I'm sure that's exactly how it's going to work out. Not. All right. But anyway, so yes, we can also have Vietnamese clothing, Chinese jeans made by 3D printers eventually for pennies a pound. On our own home networked 3D printers in the future. And that's early 2020s, guys. I mean, what is that? Less than 10 years. But that does not mean the end of the fashion industry. Let's look at other industries that have already been transformed from physical production to digital ones, such as books, movies, and music. Yes, good thing they brought that up. If anyone has been active on YouTube, you will have noticed that there are all kinds of new crazy things that YouTube is implementing, even for trying to monetize something as simple, stupid as a 40-second promo for your channel that you made with your own graphics and with free, able to be monetized music out of YouTube's music library itself that says right there, free to use to monetize. They basically make you fill out a legal statement with every detail about how you own the rights to every single thing in that 30-second promo video before they will even give you the 9 cents that it has earned in your AdSense dollars. The TPP has all kinds of global copyright infringement teeth that it's going to implement, and it allows corporations to turn around and sue governments of other countries if they feel their profits have been lost or that their digital content has been stolen or somehow manipulated. Before it was on a country-by-country basis, this will make the prosecution global. So very interesting that they mentioned books, movies, and music, because that's a lot of where these copyright laws are going to go after. Despite enormous changes in business models and the availability of many free open source products, We've talked about that before. I'd always be careful of open source because I know it's a beautiful thing. Lots of universities and global brains contributing to make something bigger and better. But always remember that there's trolls. There's somehow some sort of government involvement or dollars somewhere. And I promise we're going to look at Tor. Probably not today. Maybe we'll kick off the week next week looking at some of that stuff and some of the DARPA dollars that are going into Tor 2.0. Anyway, but it says, despite the enormous changes in business models, remember, this is CNN that I'm reading. So always a spin. And the availability of many free open source products that, yes, you should embrace and give all your secrets to. The overall revenues for proprietary forms on these products remain strong, and we can readily experiment printing out organs and printing a biodegradable scaffolding and then populating it with a patient's own stem cells, all with a 3D printer. And yes, I've talked about that at length. By the early 2020s, this will be reaching clinical practice. What? You need a new liver. So you know what? It's going to put out, put the organ stealers all out of business. No more worrying about ending up in a bathtub full of ice once you go to visit Mexico. Anyway, all right. So now they talk about IBM Watson. Consider that IBM's Watson got a higher score on America's television game of Jeopardy than the best two human players combined. And Jeopardy is a broad task involving the complicated natural language queries, which include puns, riddles, jokes, and metaphors. For example, Watson got his query correct in the rhyme category, a long, tiresome speech delivered by a frothy pie topping. And it correctly responded with, what is a meringue harangue? Now, I'm going to tell you what's really scary about this. And I know it sounds kind of stupid that it was a rhyme category on a game show on TV. But what's really scary about this is I talked about this 3+ years ago, how DARPA and some of the big tech companies were using social media as well as any of our transactions that were happening in chats and other online forums as a sociology project, trying to determine how we interact, how we use slang, how to scrape raw text that wasn't formatted, how to distinguish between real words and made up words that were some sort of code and then crack those ciphers. So the fact that IBM is at a point now where it can look at a pun or a riddle on a game show with some sort of very, I don't know, riddly speech and come up with the correct answer, to me says that they are way further ahead than what we actually understand. And that's what I keep saying. I keep telling you guys, you know, Kurzweil is a futurist, so of course he's going to tell you it's not too far down the line. And then you have a lot of scientists out there that are like, nah, you know, this isn't going to happen for another 100 years. Well, I'm telling you, it's somewhere in between. I really think Kurzweil is more on the ball since he has his fingers on the artery, the big carotid artery that leads to the AI brain at Google. Anyway, back to this. What is not widely appreciated is that Watson got its knowledge by reading Wikipedia and several other encyclopedias, a total of over 200 million pages of natural language documents. I'm sure it was doing much more than Wikipedia. Like I said, I read about some of the other experiments that DARPA was doing with some of their AI. Watson, of course, is IBM, but don't think that they're not all connected and involved between the Connectome Project, Synapse, and the Global Brain Project that our federal government is a party to, as well as all the universities and a lot of the medical institutions. It says, so you did a better job than Watson at reading that page, but Watson makes up for this relatively weak reading by reading more pages and reading a lot more pages, and it can combine its inferences across everything it has ever read and conclude that there is a 99.9% chance that Obama is president. At Google, we are creating a system that will read every single document on the web and look for every meaning in every book and provide a rich search and question answering experience based on the true meaning of natural language. And what's very disturbing about Kurzweil mentioning that is that we also did a story about Google's new truth algorithm that is being implemented on the web because, oh, there's so much disinformation on the internet. That pesky internet. We looked at a story yesterday where, quote unquote, researchers were looking at anti-vaccine websites and deciding that, oh, those anti-vaxxers, they're so unscientific with all of their research and all their stories about what's happened to their children after getting vaccines. And they are confusing new parents. So we need to now have a conference, and they did. They just had this mental health conference in Chicago to try to come up with ways to combat the anti-vaxxer story. Don't worry about the man behind the curtain, Representative Posey, going up in front of Congress with documentation from a CDC whistleblower showing the connection between autism and the MMR vaccine that they destroyed. No! Don't worry about that. Just remember that the Google Truth algorithm will help weed out the sites that don't have the Google truth that we've determined with our artificial intelligence scanning all of the data on the internet. We'll make sure that the only thing that we provide to you in the future in our search engine is raw Google verified truth. By the early 2020s, we will be routinely working and playing with each other in a full immersion visual auditory virtual blah. Can you say that 30 times? We will be routinely working and playing with each other in full immersion visual auditory virtual environments. And by the 2030s, we will add the tactile sense to full immersion virtual reality. The telephone is virtual reality in that you can meet with someone as if you are together, at least for auditory. We have now added the visual sense with video conferencing, although not yet 3D and full immersion. And that's where that Oculus Rift and augmented cognition comes in. The virtual sense will become full immersion over the next decade. We will also be able to augment real reality. There you go. Ding, ding. So that I could see you sitting on the couch in my living room and could see me sitting on your back porch, even though we were hundreds of miles apart. Your augmented reality glasses will also be able to make suggestions for you for an interesting joke or antidote that you could slip into your conversation you're having. And that then goes along with that TED conference we looked at probably 6 months ago that SLC Mike had found for us, where they were talking about physically in the future embedding that technology right into your cortex. So you will always have that augmented reality and the assistant suggesting things for you in your brain from birth. Says there will be limited ways of adding tactile sense to virtual and augmented reality by the 2020s, but full immersion visual tactile experiences will require tapping directly into where? Oh, yes, the nervous system. We'll be able to do that in the 2030s with nanobots traveling, good old Kurzweil, traveling non-invasively into the brain through the capillaries and augmenting the signals coming in from our real senses. So there you go. A little vision into the psychopath's mind. Ray Kurzweil, this is your future. And, you know, there was a story that we found yesterday talking about RNAi and being able to do things and testing it in humans. Gene editing saves girl from dying from leukemia in world's first, November 5th, 2015. For the first time ever, a person's life has been saved by gene editing. One-year-old Layla was dying from leukemia. Again, you know, not only did they prey on the sick and desperate, but they preyed on desperate parents who had a dying baby and no other choice. And they even say that in here. One-year-old Layla was dying from leukemia after all conventional treatments failed. quote, "We did not want to give up on our daughter, so we asked the doctors to try anything." And that's the key. Once you tell them that, they will unleash their mad science medicine. You become now a case study, said her mother, Lisa, in a statement released by Great Ormond Street Hospital in London, where Layla was treated. And the doctors did. Layla's doctors got permission to use an experimental form of gene therapy using genetically engineered immune cells from a donor. And within a month, these cells had killed off all of the cancerous cells in her bone marrow. It is still too soon to say that she is cured. And the team stressed at a press conference in London on November 5th, they will only become clear after a year or two. So far, though, she is doing well, and there is no sign of cancer returning. Other patients are already receiving the same treatment. And Jane, I want to thank you. Jane actually found the original source to the story from the medical center's website, and I did not get a chance to read that. But I want to read that and find out exactly what and how they manipulated these immune cells from a donor to kill or flip off switches within that the bone marrow cells for producing leukemia. So we'll keep an eye on that one. I'm going to get back to that next week. But here's now a story that I've had up for a while, getting back to Kurzweil and ending up with nanobots in your brain. Yes, remember, revolving door between DARPA, Google, and the federal government. Here's a story from May 28th, 2014. DARPA plans, we've talked about this a million times, DARPA plans to help soldiers' mental diseases with brain-computer implants. And this, of course, started out as the helping them with PTSD after we sent them into war zones to kill little children that they had nightmares about then forever. And now they are using it with the first brain implant live surgery done on TV, National Geographic, last week for putting brain implants into Parkinson's patients' brains. In an ambitious effort to address the enormous problem of mental illness among its ranks, the U.S. military is funding the development of surgically implanted brain-computer interfaces designed to target and correct malfunctioning neural circuits in conditions like clinical depression, addiction, and anxiety in soldiers and veterans. And now add to that Parkinson's disease. Remember, the story's over a year and a half old. And what's even more disturbing, when we look at the research that they've done, I have stories on this. The former head, he just left as of the beginning of November, the director of the National Institute of Mental Health, to go over and work for Google's Life Sciences division. And I dug into that the other day, and I found some disturbing things about that dude. So we'll look at that in a minute. Mental illness rates in the American military dwarfs rates in the civilian population. So former military or current military, look out, because you will be our first targets for fixing malfunctioning neural circuits. A recent study found that so much as a quarter of the surveyed active duty troops are suffering from at least one disorder. A team of physicians, engineers, and neuroscientists backed by DARPA, the research arm of the Pentagon, and led by UC San Francisco, we've been hearing their name a lot, as well as Massachusetts General Hospital, are working on a five-year, $26 million research program known as, and yes, we talked about this one as well, good old subnets, systems-based neurotechnology for emerging therapies. One early concept shows electronic device implanted between a patient's skull and the scalp. And the device interfaces between electrodes placed around the brain and wirelessly connects doctors who can review detailed real-time neurological data and then use the devices to administer custom therapies. Welcome to your future, especially when we discover that they can now diagnose mental diseases such as schizophrenia by your voice patterns in a smartphone application. And we remember we have good old Regina Duggan, who's heading up the smartphone division, smart device division at Google. It's a very, very scary thought. On the other end of the spectrum, the Massachusetts General Hospital team is developing implants that will remain in psychiatric patients for their entire lives. These devices aim to record everything in the brain, big and small, from single neurons firing to imaging entire neural networks that will allow scientists to precisely find and follow the causes and effects of several neurological diseases. That was really horrifying. Everything, record everything in the brain. Neuropsychiatric conditions are some of the most severe and devastating conditions that can happen to anyone, said Edward F. Chang, the co-director of the Center for Neural Engineering and Prostheses. And remember, we also discovered back a few months ago that there's a huge collaboration between all of these neuropsychology, neuroengineering programs in the United States and in Israel. This isn't just a U.S. thing. This is a global thing. This is part of that whole brain project and cracking every secret. You will have no more secrets. The ability to treat or cure some of these diseases of the mind has been a dream of mine since I was very young, he said. It says this deep brain stimulation, which was a surgery that implants a brain pacemaker to treat movement disorders like Parkinson's and essential tremors, as well as paralysis and patients who are missing limbs. And we've seen all that. They've been, of course, using the veterans for that as well. Similar implants have also been used in small trials to treat disorders like major depression, but have yet to be widely approved for use. Subnet plans on demonstrating the technology it develops and then submitting those for approval to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Deep brain stimulation now spans approximately 100,000 patients already worldwide, but it still has a few glitches. The treatment has sparked headlines when a Dutch man was being treated for severe obsessive compulsive disorder. And then he developed a strong urge to listen to American country singer Johnny Cash. Yes, it's exactly what I'm saying, people. Just like a computer system, we do not understand the full interworkings of the complexity of the human body. And this is just like taking zappers or taking little things and putting them in there to see what happens. This isn't like with any real knowledge of what we're changing or doing. We are all guinea pigs with no repercussions if we get screwed up or the next five generations of our progeny are screwed up because of this. Says the implanted electrode affected the pleasure and reward processes in the brain. Oh, ding, ding, dopamine. And the man was effectively cured of his ACD, OCD affliction. And the anxiety it brought on within 6 weeks, but he rapidly developed an intense love of Johnny Cash for the next 6 months. When the electrode's batteries ran out, his musical taste returned to what it was in pre-surgery, Dutch singers and the Rolling Stones. I mean, that's frightening. Oh, my God. I know it's only Johnny Cash, but who knows what it could be. It says this program was launched in support of Obama's, yes, $100 million brain initiative, a project announced in 2013. and aimed at widening our understanding of human brain function and how to cure brain diseases. And like I said, don't forget DARPA and Kurzweil and all the other high-tech lunatics who want to live forever are involved in this. There's another story that came out on the 3rd. Memory-boosting devices are now being tested in humans. U.S. military research suggests that electrodes can compensate for damaged neurological tissue. In a strategy designed to improve memory by delivering brain stimulation through implanted electrodes, is undergoing trials in humans. So it looks like it's all balls out now. The U.S. military, which is funding the research, of course, good old DARPA, hopes that this approach may help many thousands of soldiers, again, who have developed deficits to their long-term memory as a result of head traumas. At the society, and this is that meeting I was talking about, at the society meeting in Chicago, Illinois, October 17th through 21st, so it was just last month, two teams funded by who? Oh, DARPA. Presented evidence that such implanted devices can improve a person's ability to retain memories. And how significant is that, since the majority of the American public has been shown in a study by Microsoft that our attention span is that of a goldfish, less than 6 seconds, and our addiction to our digital devices causes us to forget stuff because we no longer have to remember them like we did in the old days, because it's always available on the internet. I see a brain implant coming in our near future. By mimicking the electrical patterns that create and store memories, and this is some of that research they were doing about erasing and inserting memories, pretty scary. The research found that gaps caused by the brain injury can be bridged. The findings raise hope that a neuroprosthetic that automatically enhances flagging memory could aid not only brain-injured soldiers, but also people who have had strokes or even Nana, some of those who have lost the power to recall memories through normal aging. Because of the risks associated with surgically placing devices in the brain, both groups are studying people with epilepsy who already have implanted electrodes. So I guess they're doing it for epilepsy also. And the researchers can use these electrodes both to record the brain activity and to stimulate specific groups of neurons. And although the ultimate goal is to treat traumatic brain injury, these people might benefit as well, says biological engineer Theodore Berger at the University of Southern California. That is because repeated seizures can destroy brain tissue needed for long-term memory formation. Short-term memories are thought to be created when a part of the brain called the hippocampus aggregates sensory information as well as the perception of space and time and holds it readily accessible for a short while. Accessing the memory during that time will solidify it into a long-term memory. The key process is a signal that travels from one part of the hippocampus to another, and Berger and his colleagues hypothesize that by recreating that signal, that might restore the ability to solidify memories in people with damage to the hippocampus. And in one of these, I actually was reading, they were talking about then removing memories, which we talked about that anyway and read about that, but I thought it was in the story. And before we run out of time, though, so just know there is really some insanity going on. And here, even at the bottom, it says, in a study that they presented at the Chicago meeting, Penn University neuroscientist Daniel Rizzuto and his colleagues recorded brain activity in 28 people as they recalled a list of words. And using these patterns, researchers have now developed what? Oh, ding, ding, an algorithm that predicted, and we talked about this also, with high accuracy, whether a person would remember a given word by stimulating the brain only when a person reads words that were likely to be forgotten. The researchers could boost performance up to 140%. And another story, too, we had talked about DARPA using these technologies to engineer the perfect super soldier. And that's some of the stuff that they're working on, changing brain chemicals when they sense that the soldier is facing anxiety. Intel already has a processor chip that will do that. We looked at a video once where they had these spider creatures that were powered by this new sensing chip from Intel that when the wearer, and it was going to be embedded into clothing for wearable computing, when the user started to show biometric characteristics of stress like rapid heartbeat, rapid breathing, sweating, that the computer chip would then be able to recognize that it needed to do something in order to help alleviate those stress functions. That technology is some of the technology that DARPA is using as well for biosensing. Anyway, okay, now let's dig into this disturbing story about the head of Mental Health Institute leaving for Google Life Sciences. Thomas Insel, the director of the National Institute of Mental Health, announced on Tuesday, and this was back in September, that he planned to step down in November, ending his 13-year tenure at the helm of the world's leading funder of behavioral health research to join Google Life Sciences, which seeks to develop technologies for an early detection and treatment of health problems. The announcement is no small personal matter for behavioral sciences. In hiring him, Google, which is in the process of reorganizing into its new company called Alphabet, lands a first-rate research scientist and administrator with exhaustive knowledge of brain and behavioral sciences. And he has also recruited some of the top researchers into brain sciences from other fields. Dr. Francis Collin, the director of the National Institute of Health, appointed Dr. Bruce Colbert as acting director while they look for a replacement. Blah, blah, blah. I wanted, though, to find here in his new job, Dr. Insel will do an about face as to what he's been doing, turning back to the psychosocial realm now while at Google. Only this time he has a big new set of tools. One project he has thought about is how to detect psychosis early using language aesthetics, which are algorithms that show promise in picking up the semantic signatures of disorganized thinking, characteristic of psychosis from your voice. Well, how amazing. We've been talking about that. Now we have this mad science gone mad psychiatrist who is given a blank check pretty much at Google's new life science division that wants to really jump into mental health understanding and curing. We got DARPA and Kurzweil already in bed with the same gaggle of lunatics. And you can see what a horribly disturbing picture this is. I want to bounce over now to a story out of IEEE Spectrum from June 18, 2014. We had done this story back then. Smart app keeps watch over schizophrenic patients. Monitoring behavior patterns can predict a relapse. What if a schizophrenic patient could have the equivalent of a therapist in their pocket watching for symptoms of a relapse? Well, that is a promise of a smartphone-based system now being tested at a hospital in Glen Oaks, New York. The app called CrossCheck uses a suite of sensors. Remember, we talked about biosensors. To create a profile of a patient's healthy behavioral and social patterns. And don't think they're not already doing that to us. Google has all of your interactions online. They know your searches. They know your emails. They can pick up your voice because they have a patent on it. They have all your cell phone interactions if you have an Android device. don't think they're not already doing that as a sociological study somewhere and putting it into your dossier. So it creates a profile of a patient's healthy behavioral and social patterns that can then raise an alert when the patient deviates from their normal behavior. For a schizophrenic patient, a relapse is both damaging and demoralizing, says Dror Ben-Zev, an assistant professor of psychiatry at Dartmouth College and the study's principal investigator. The patient can then end up in jail or in the hospital, which then disrupts their therapies and normal routines. The cross-check study includes 150 schizophrenic patients who have been discharged from Zucker Hillside Hospital in Glen Oaks within the past year, and half of those patients have received the smartphones with this app, while the other half will receive the standard clinical services that the hospital provides after discharge. Now, I saw another story. BehavioSec is a new company. This is from biometricupdate.com. BehavioSec aims to bring behavioral biometric solutions to U.S. companies. Oh, all the U.S. companies that are now by federal edict working with all the big tech companies who are by federal edict because of national security working with the federal government. Stockholm-based BehavioSec, which offers users authentication technologies that identify people by measuring users' typing and swiping behavior on their laptops and mobile phones, has set its sights on the U.S. market, according to a new report by Fierce Finance IT. And I've talked about that as well. That's also going to be integrated into Windows 10 technology. It's using your usual patterns of doing things to identify you. This is like biometrics on steroids. Over the past year, BehavioSec has added projects in the UK, Switzerland, the Benelux countries, I have no idea where that is, and is currently in talks with companies in the US to also provide them with the technology. And of course, they have a headquarters in Palo Alto, California. All right, guys, well, it's Friday. So make sure everybody sticks around as Lonnie Clark is up next, and I will catch up with you on Monday. Thank you.